A Great Artist, a New Location on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Paul Herrera has worked with and has written about Father Ed Kaddish. We'll meet him today on Scribble. The Art League has moved, and you have written a book, so let's talk about both of those, Paul. What is the Art League, and where is it now?
Well, the Art Legacy League was at the J.B. Young Opportunity Center in the middle of Davenport, and just recently we moved to the One River Center, which is One River Place, rather, which is right on the River Drive in Davenport. So we didn't move far, but we are now on a river location.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Art Legacy League?
The Art Legacy League is a group of teachers, and we also have a bit of a museum of Father Kaddish's work. We focus mainly on his work, but we also have works by other artists that we've put together and friends. And we also have a bit of a fundraiser from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, we've got to have fundraisers. We do that, too.
And you do classes and things like that?
We offer classes, yes. Mm-hmm. We have been offering classes for several years now. And people ask us, well, what age group do you teach? And we teach everyone from 3 to 93, whoever is interested.
What would prompt a person to come to the Art Legacy League? Are they looking to learn calligraphy or what?
Well, we teach calligraphy. And we also teach watercolor and slate inscription, stone inscription, which is what I learned from Father Kaddish. That was an apprenticeship that I took with him, along with a good friend of mine, Bob O'Hare. That's where I started.
Slate inscription, that's where you chisel into slate?
We are chiselers, yes.
That's hard.
Well, it depends on what kind of stone you're talking about. Granite, yes, that's hard, but Father Kaddish and I would go around and we would actually harvest, I guess you could say, old chalkboards from some of the old schools that were about to be torn down. And that's some of the best slate that we recycle. Father Kaddish was quite a recycler. You know, he was a child of the Depression, so not much was around us that wasn't reused or reclaimed from somewhere else.
He actually was an orphan, wasn't he?
He was an orphan, and I think that may have been part of what formed his attitude. He was actually born in Montana, and his father was a copper miner. He died of what they called miner's consumption, which is more commonly known as black lung disease. And when his father died, his mother also passed. And so he, Father Kaddish, and his brother Vincent, and the two younger twins were sent to Moose Heart in Illinois.
Uh-huh. And that's where he grew up then, huh?
That's where he went to high school, essentially, and that's also where he learned his two trades that he was able to support himself with at age 18 when he left Moose Heart. He was a sign painter and a musician.
What instrument did he play?
He played two. He played the trumpet and the trombone, and he played both very well. Of course, he played with the Tri-City Symphony for 1 year, because the way the story goes, and I've come across evidence of this, they needed a cellist, and so he taught himself how to play the cello. True story. Actually, when he came to Davenport, he was a student at St. Ambrose College in those days, and he was hired as the band director because he was such a good musician in Chicago. By day, he was a sign painter, and by night, he was a trumpeter and a trombonist in what they called the local nightclub. Of course, during Prohibition, they were a little more known as speakeasies.
Yeah.
So he came to Ambrose intending to be enter the priesthood, right?
That's correct, yes.
What prompted that move? I mean, you're working as a sign painter, and you're working in a speakeasy, and then you decide to become a priest. How does that work?
Well, that's part of a lecture that I put together, which I call The Life and Times of Edward M. Kadich, who becomes a priest, of course. And I've given that around the country and also in Cambridge, England, a couple of years ago. And he starts out, as an orphan in Montana, of course, and then comes to Illinois via Moose Heart. But he keeps himself occupied as a sign painter and a musician in the speakeasy. And, of course, what you have to do is you have to put it into this time frame where, like I say, it's Prohibition. It's the 1920s. And characters like Al Capone and Bugs Moran are fighting over the illegal booze business in Chicago. And things got pretty violent from time to time, as you can imagine.
Yeah. And then, but what prompted him to become a priest?
Well, I think he had that calling all along. His family was Catholic in Montana, and that was part of the draw of Moose Heart. They raised the children there in the religion of the family. And there was a young priest that came there, Father John Laffey. And Father Laffey grabbed onto the boys, Kadish, and they were kind of wayward cowboys in Montana, but he got them on the straight and narrow. And I think that Ed Kadich, Ned, our hero of the story, saw the wages of evil in the nightclubs and how rough things could be, and he did not want to go back to the poverty that he had faced in Illinois, or rather Montana, as a young child. And so he decided, along with a good friend of his, Father Ferrara, and they decided that they wanted to become priests. And so Father Laffey basically pointed to St. Ambrose and said, you know, you're quite a musician. I've got a Monsignor over there that I know, Monsignor Cole, and go talk to him about taking over the band as an undergraduate and see if he can have a job for you. You can work your way through college that way, because you'll need a college education before you ever become ordained.
Uh-huh. And so that's what he did. A band director?
He was the band director at St. Ambrose College. He led the marching band. And in fact, there in the archives at St. Ambrose, it tells about how at times his band was so good that they were asked to substitute for the band at the University of Iowa in Iowa City.
No kidding. What is the anecdote about the cello?
He was a musician, of course, and so he familiarized himself with other musicians in Davenport at the time and in the Tri-Cities in those days, you know, the symphony. And so I'm sure he must have played brass with them. And so one year the cellist must have moved on or whatever, and they decided they needed a cellist. And so Father decided, you know, he just said, well, I'll teach myself how to do it. And in fact, it didn't stop there. He actually made a series of the bows, I guess. I'm not a cellist, so I guess you need a bow made a certain way. And so he made several of those for his cello.
Yeah. Roel, you talked about an art teacher at Augustana.
Yeah, I'm since you had him as a you were his student, I'm wondering how one goes about teaching art. I know how you can teach English. You get them to read Moby Dick, and then you discuss it. But it seems to me it's awfully hard for an artist not to impress her or his style on his students. When I first came to Augustana, Ed Merrill was the head of the art department, and he taught. He was so afraid of that he taught by not teaching. A student would say, you know, the first day of a painting class, how do I hold a brush? I don't know. Find it. Figure out. You know, and most of the students would hold it in a sloppy way, and eventually they would discover a really good way of doing it that he hadn't thought of.
Ah, okay.
So the only way a student can go above his teacher is to somehow not get caught in that trap. But I gather that is neither your nor Kadish's
So
philosophy.
It would be a method of teaching by not teaching.
Yes.
That's kind of Eastern, you know.
Yes.
Totally different than Father Kadich's approach, because by the time I arrived in the late 60s, of course, he was trained as a sign painter. He went through the union apprenticeship. He was taught exactly how to.
So I wonder if that had some influence on the way he taught art.
Completely. Just reviewing his life and writing about him and putting myself as best I could through his experience at the time, and of course going through the Kadich experience myself, by then he had refined everything to his own style. It wasn't a sign painting apprenticeship per se that we went through. It was a Kadich apprenticeship. And so you learned every part of the brush, every part of the bristle, how to handle the brush, and he would demonstrate right in front of you. You know, in fact, as I was his teaching assistant as an undergrad yet, a student would complain about, Father, I think there's something wrong with this brush. And he would come over and take the brush out of their hand, write a beautiful three or four letters with it, and he says, I think it's fixed now, and hand it back to the student.
Oh.
So there was a definite structure to the way he taught, but he always insisted that he did not teach fine art or commercial art. He just basically taught art, drawing, calligraphy, painting, the lot.
He is known for some very controversial things he drew, throwing Jesus in working clothes and so on. And there was quite a controversy about him, wasn't there?
There was quite a controversy, and, you know, I think from knowing him and working with him for so long that these things were done purposefully. He would say things that would get your attention. You know, he would say things like, oh, well, there's the good Lord, you know, she would not approve of this. And, of course, in the 60s, people were a little more receptive to that. But back in the mid-1950s, people would just be totally shocked and What his objection was that you would see images of these religious figures, you see. And, of course, he being an artist, he would focus on the images. And they were always the same image over and over again, which was frozen somewhere back centuries before. So he was attempting to update those images and in so doing have religious people understand that these stories did not occur 2,000 years ago because some of the same sins that are being committed today to these modern people, and we would still do the same thing to them, you see. So that was his liturgical message.
Yeah, and I remember when that blew up.
Yeah, he was quoted in Time magazine.
Yeah, it's it caught everybody's attention. But his images are so strong, rather thick lines, and so on. You spot him right away, don't you?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, I think that goes back to his sign painting. And he would say in the drawing class, referring to your line, putting down a line, making a drawing, he would say it once and shut up.
Yeah.
Just shocking things like that to grab the college students' attention. In other words, he didn't like these sketchy sketch lines where you just sort of try to figure out the image. He would want you to see the image and then record it in a solid line, a very strong statement, you see.
Most of us, you know, who are outside any kind of art entirely would make a distinction between sign painting, which is a craft, and art, which is art. But you're saying in his, it blended. He didn't distinguish between craft and art.
No, he didn't. No, he said just would say that it was art, whether it's commercial, you know, for sales, representing some sort of product or whatever, or if you're doing fine art, if you're doing painting. In fact, watercolor was the only paint that we used because it basically frescoes are done with watercolor because you have to paint into the wet surface, and he studied a lot of those when he was overseas in the seminary. He traveled around, and he studied inscriptions, and of course, he's best known for his work on the Trajan inscription in Rome, explaining how basically the Romans inscription cutters were sign painters. That was very shocking in and of itself. If you can imagine,
right.
Nerdy lettering artists are arguing over something like that, which we do.
I remember his famous publication on the Trajan inscriptions, and that was considered a great work, wasn't it?
It was groundbreaking. It was rewriting history. I should say correcting history, because up to that point, you know, the Romans didn't leave any books behind saying, here's how we did the inscriptions, you know, step one, apprenticeships. It was all lost during the medieval times. And so one had to go back and actually put themselves into the character and try to decipher the images that were left behind. And so the primary focus and the well-known inscription at the time was the inscription at the base of Trajan's Column right in downtown Rome. And so a lot of the lettering artists knew about that. Even the type designers in the 20th century would go back there. And it was well-known, like I say. There's a book, the Englishman who is credited with reviving calligraphy in the 20th century, Edward Johnston, and his apprentice, Eric Gill, who was the inscription cutter, that they featured that in their book, their classic book. And so Cadditch knew that was a place to start. So when he went to Rome in the seminary, he studied that inscription and he took one look at it and he said, these letters were written with a brush. They were written with a soft tool. Mm. They weren't written with a hard tool like a reed or a two pencil or some sort of geometric design. It was the consummate skill of the painter and then come back and carve them in the stone to make them permanent.
He worked in slate as well, and you studied that with him, didn't you?
Yes, we do slate inscription. In fact, when I was 14 years old, I wanted to run away to Rome and become a sculptor. And so when I got to St. Ambrose, I saw this inscription cutting going on with Father Cadditch and my good friend Bob O'Hare. And I thought, okay, well, this is a good place to start until I can run away to Rome. And so I got stuck. It was great. I enjoyed it so much. We harvested chalkboards from old schools that were being torn down, and these were solid slate, and they were thick enough to work on.
But that's a touchy business. You can't correct a mistake on slate, can you?
You can't, no. It's literally cut in stone.
Yeah, that's amazing. How long did it take you to put this book together?
Oh, I've been working on it probably 5 or more years. I was very particular in that I wanted to visit some of the places that I was going to write about. And, of course, one of them had to be Butte, Montana, which is where he was raised as a child until he was about 12 years old, was when he and his twin brother and the younger twins were orphaned, sent to Illinois. And the first view of Butte, it just looks like a rough town, a mining town. In fact, some of the places that I mentioned in the book are now gone completely because it's just an open pit.
Well, yeah, the mine's right there, right?
That's right.
I mean, it's swallowing parts of Dubuque.
It is.
I mean, of
Butte.
Butte, yeah.
But Cadditch remains relevant, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because the basic things that he taught were skill, eye and hand coordination, and with all of our computers and so forth, the computer only can give you what you put into it. And some of these programs, I suppose he would be using some of the programs that we're using nowadays, but what I've done is I've taken his holy cards. We used to get little printed cards in Catholic school when you got a good grade on a test or something, and they were referred to as holy cards or Bible cards. And there are over 200 images that Cadditch made and printed himself on his own catfish press. That was another side note. People would say, oh, well, you call it catfish because it sounds like your name. You go, oh, no. It's nothing like that. The catfish is indigenous to the Mississippi River, and my press is right on St. Ambrose, which is close to the Mississippi River, and it's not funded by the college at all. So I had to call it the catfish press, you see. He was also a storyteller.
Yes, I guess so.
But what I've done is I've taken his holy cards and scanned them and then turned them into greeting cards that you could open up. And that's part of how we raised funds for our nonprofit, the Art Legacy League. We sell holy cards, or greeting cards, I should say.
So the Art Legacy League is continuing in the tradition of Cadditch. And you have students there. Do you have many students?
We have had several students. Of course, we've had to revise our approach now with all the social distancing and so on. And so, like I say, we have moved recently, so we have not restarted our class structure just yet. But it looks like it may be more of a personal type of interaction, since we cannot have large, you know, a lot of the schools that are starting up now have to worry about the social distancing and so forth. And so we're trying to adapt to that. We want to follow all those guidelines.
Yeah, the pandemic is the personal touch. I remember Kaddish leaning over a student, you know, and indicating something. You can't really do that safely. It's kind of messed up a lot of things. But you're pushing forward. When do you think the book will come out?
Well, I'm hoping later on this year. We would appreciate some donations to the Art Legacy League to help the funding. It's kind of interesting because when the weather would get really bad, as you know it sometimes does here in the winter, Father Kaddish would call me up because I had a four-wheel drive truck, and he would say, well, we've got to get over to Atkinson, to St. Anthony's, tomorrow morning. I'm saying Mass, so pick me up at 6 o'clock. So I would dutifully be there. That was part of the work of the apprentice in those days, you know.
I'm going to like to talk a little bit more about the calligraphy, because that, you know, to anybody who just knows Kaddish on the margins, he's the calligrapher, right? And
yes,
we may know that he does the other arts.
Yes.
Why the continued interest in calligraphy?
Well, you know, it's
just amazing.
It is. It's amazing because, you know, with all the computers and so forth. In fact, I think what people still need generally is a personal touch. You know, I get texts, and of course I get emails, as a lot of people do nowadays, but that occasional card, it's just more of a personal touch because you can actually see the writing of someone and the interaction. A good friend of mine, Father Robert Palladino, who, by the way, studied with Father Kaddish, and Father Palladino is best known for his teaching Steve Jobs the appreciation of lettering and so forth. And so I would get the handwritten note from Father Palladino, and it just means so much more to the average person to have that touch from someone else and to see their actual writing. And so I think that part of the continuation of calligraphy is making letters with your own hand and your own ability and making them beautifully, you know.
But that's a slow way of doing things, isn't it?
It's slow, but what's the purpose? Where are you going to in such a hurry, you know?
Yeah, that's true. It's a... But Kaddish is, I think, everyone who came in contact with him remembers him. He could be, he was quite a person, and I must say I found him to be one of the sterling examples of St. Ambrose back in those days, back in the late 40s and the early 50s. They had some amazing people there. And Kaddish was one. As a matter of fact, he was perhaps the outstanding one. And what was a very distinguished, unusual faculty of priest scholars.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, I kind of compared the priesthood in those days to being in the Army, because back in the 40s, at the outbreak of World War II, the campus, and of course Kaddish was back and he was ordained by then, he was teaching, and he was dual teaching music in those days still, but he was starting up his art department as well. And the engineering teacher was called away to the war. He was a civilian. But Kaddish was given the books for the engineering class 7 days prior to the beginning of the semester. And the president of the college said, congratulations, you're now the engineering instructor. So Kaddish basically was kind of an epitome of STEAM, science, technology, engineering, yeah, right. Art, and mathematics, because he also taught mathematics.
Do we have a title for the book?
Well, You know, I wanted to call it the same as my lecture, The Life and Times of Edward M. Kadich, but I think that's going to be the subtitle. What I've come up with so far is Rich Man, Poor Man, Priest, because he knew all three, basically. In his childhood, right. they were just poverty-stricken because of circumstances back in those days. And I think it's no secret that he had quite a coin collection, which was never spent a dime on himself at the time he passed. I was just reading that headline the other day where it was quoted that his coin collection alone was worth $1.6 million,
wow.
You know. Actually, wow. By the time it was all sold, it was more than that. Not to give away too much of the book, you see.
No, and as a matter of fact, you could talk for another hour and still not give away everything in the book because, you know, how the man grew, how he developed, all the things he did, it is just amazing that he was so versatile. How do you account for that versatility?
Oh,
can you?
Well, the best I can do is just by working with him, watching him. He worked from 5 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock in the evening every day. He would take a break on Sundays to go out to Atkinson and say Mass, of course. But it would be a quick Mass. In fact, his nickname was Father Fast Mass. As you were alluding to earlier, Don, he would say something so shocking but make them think about the gospel and the homily and send them home with something. But always got right to the point. Came right back to Davenport and got right back to work.
Yeah, I've often talked about playing a game of chess with him. We were all interested in chess in the seminary, and so we wanted a faculty member. And he had me set up a board and at a distance, and he told me to call out my moves, which I did, and he called out his. And I mean, he beat me so fast. And I thought I was a great chess player. I realized that there are levels of expertise in life, and Kadich seemed to operate at the top of most of them.
Oh, he was just a workaholic, and he worked at so many different facets. The story has to be divided up into different factions. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the chronology that they have over at St. Ambrose of Kadich. You can't put everything into the chronology because he just changed gears so many times within any given year, any given month.
Uh-huh. You can call your book The Elusive Catfish.
That's a good title.
Well, it is amazing that he did so many things, and he did them so well. Apparently, that was the thing about Kadich. It had to be done just right.
Oh, that was one of the ways he taught the art. He said, look, it's no big deal to copy some other artist. He says, people do it all the time. But when you do, you have to make it better than what you're trying to copy, you see. That was a quality.
Well, Paul Herrera, we're looking forward to the publication of that book, and congratulations on the recent meet of the Art Legacy League. I hope everything prospers and goes well for that organization. And the success of your book, too.
Thank you, Don.
Paul Herrera has been our guest today. A new book on Father Kadich is coming out, and stay alert for that, and stay alert for the next edition of Scribble, when Roel Tweet and I'll be back with another half hour of chat about literature.